This is the March 31 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles, along with Greg Johnson of TGM Total Grain Marketing, and Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, where you can find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles, when you saw the numbers released from the United States Department of Agriculture this morning and did some calculations in your head and thought about what they really meant for the marketplace, what were the first things that jumped out at you?
When you initially look at it, and I think it's an easy one, you know, corn was the loser on the numbers there. Because of the acreage, the stocks number was a zero. The beans actually a bit of a winner in terms of price expectations, again, because of the acreage. And the stocks number on beans, we could maybe construe a little bit friendly, but I don't think it's a real big push necessarily.
Have you delved into the numbers deeply yet to get a good idea of what they might mean?
Well, you know, the one thing I guess I will say, you know, in taking a look at the stocks numbers to get those out of the way, the corn number and looking at the feed and residual number there, I kind of wonder if we're going to see some downgrading in the feed and residual estimate for the marketing year itself when we get our next set of S&Ds. I don't know that it's going to be huge, but I think we could see a little slippage in that. Beans, you know, a lot of people would argue, well, you know, we're a little bit tighter, you know, and so maybe these exports could be revised up, but the problem with moving the needle on export is the unshipped sales are getting to be awfully small, and we need to start seeing sales roll into our export book to really go forward. So, you know, with that, you know, I guess I'm a little careful on the stocks numbers themselves. Over into the planting number, the corn number really told me how a lot of people put down ammonia last fall. I mean, just a whole bunch. And that kind of secured the corn acreage number as it was, which is really kind of surprising because all winter long, what did we hear? We heard first we had, you know, some problems in Argentina that just with the soybean crop that kept snowballing. And then there was southern Brazil that kept in the news in there that their crop was going down. And then in northern Brazil, it was rain and we could see some yields not maybe match expectations. All the bean numbers, or all the bean news was friendly, but when you looked over at the corn, you know, there wasn't anything really huge in terms of news other than looking askance at Ukraine and maybe a little bit of talk about the Argentine corn crop. But farmers didn't respond, apparently, to any of this bean news that seemed to be rolling into the market on a continuous basis, which I thought was kind of interesting with the planting expectations we got today.
In the United States, Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa, all three are up. I suppose, as you mentioned, fall application in the northern two-thirds of Illinois, northern two-thirds of Indiana, and Iowa probably happened. Would have been surprised that that took place in Minnesota and the Dakotas, though clearly they either have locked in nitrogen for the year already, or their expectation is just to go whole hog into the corn market, I suppose.
Well, it is to some degree in one sense that, you know, I mean, with the extreme dryness or some of the weather issues we had out in the quote unquote northwestern corn belt, and that's kind of a patchwork, you know. I mean, you go from the Red River Valley west, yeah, you really had soils that were dry at the end of the season, and so you don't seal real well. You go back out of the valley east into Minnesota, I'm going to say across southern Minnesota. You probably went ahead and knifed ammonia in the ground in there. And when you look at some of the numbers, and I looked at the all-state numbers, you know, because I always look at the total acreage mix, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, you know, we're gaining some acres up in there. The real mix is going to still be somewhat uncertain because of, you know, it's going to depend on weather in the spring. Although I've been told, don't worry about the snowpack because you can bury a shovel into the ground when it's colder than whatever, meaning they need that they need that moisture out of that snowpack to basically give them a good start here in the spring.
You also looked at the wheat numbers. I'm wondering what you saw in those that was of interest.
Well, the big thing that jumped out at me, you know, we added on the winter wheat compared to the January report, we had added 700,000 acres to a number that was already big in a lot of people's minds. Soft red number, we had a little bit of tweaking number on there. And that's still an important number because soft red, we're still working at about 1.2, 1.3 million acres more than last year. And we got to remember, you know, the northern Illinois, northern Indiana, on into Ohio, you know, in some of these northern areas, because of change in insurance rules, we can double crop beans this year. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how many people take a fly on that. And I think with the market getting some energy here today, if wheat comes off pretty good shape, I still suspect we're going to see more in a double crop planting than what some people have built into their books so far.
What have you been watching on the technical side of the marketplace?
Well, you know, I've been kind of keeping track. The corn market itself, when I look at it, and here I am looking at the nearby, you know, and I've looked back, and it's a little bit early, but, you know, it's a possibility. We put in a 40-week low here back in the beginning part of March at this point, and certainly here at this juncture moving over the, and I'm looking at the May contract moving over the 50-day moving average today kind of leans that way. So we're going to see some strength. Again, in the bigger picture, are we going to be able to punch through $6.87 on old crop corn? I tend to doubt it. Beans, I've long had a cyclo count that's been out there on old crop beans themselves towards the end of May, very beginning in June. Maybe that's still in the mix, but looking at the performance here in March so far, you're going to sit back and you're going to go, maybe it came real early. So we may have to do some recount. And I really think when I look at old beans, I still think because of the Brazilian situation, huge crop, huge numbers flowing into the pipeline, problems with, finding places to poke beans, which is going to push them into the market. I think you get upwards 1520, 1540, you know, those highs we had back there in Jan and Feb, I think it's going to have a hard time going uphill. So not really a bull in beans. And I guess at any point, I'd kind of keep an eye on those old new crop spreads. I tend to want to be more friendly new crop than old crop. Both corn and beans look going forward.
Really? That surprises me.
Well, the beans to me is a pretty easy answer because fundamentally, like I said earlier, we aren't exporting. We're in terms of making new sales. And if we don't make new sales, exports are going to continue to kind of underperform. And Brazil, meanwhile, has a lot of reason to push stuff into the world pipeline at this juncture, especially given the rebound now we've had over the last week and a half or so. Corn itself, with old crop, if we're downgrading the feed a little bit at this point, or if we do downgrade it, it says, you know, we got enough there, but still when you look forward, and especially if we find planting conditions be a little bit questionable here in April, we'll have people starting to think then, well, maybe we'll lose some corn acres and see some shift into beans, you know, somewhere along the way. So I can even be a little bit positive new crop corn. You know, I just can't get excited about old crop anymore.
I think that will do, unless you have something else you want to add.
There's one other thing in here that I think is kind of important. We've long been in a window here for April and on into May for the possibility of seeing a 3-year low in commodity indices. And certainly, you know, the performance we've had there in the last week and a half, whether you look at grains or especially if you look over at the crude oil market at this point, you have to start to wonder, are we not putting in that 3-year low at this point? We aren't going to run away to the upside right away necessarily, but if we start to consider that, it says that maybe this inflationary game has just gone through a temporary pause and we're going to kick it in gear somewhere later this year again.
Dale Durkles is with Grain Cycles. Greg Johnson now joins us. He's from TGM. That's Total Grain Marketing. Again, hi, Greg. Thanks for being with us. Let's go through some of the grain stocks figures released by the United States Department of Agriculture this morning. The trade was expecting 7.47 billion bushels of corn to be in the bin on farm or off farm. And as of March 1st, USDA says it's pretty close to that at 7.4 billion bushels. The soybean number was interesting. Trade at 1.742 billion, their expectation. 1.685 billion in the bin. It's not that big of a difference, but still the 1716 just is something I think probably the trade was thinking a lot about. And while it's kind of close to what the numbers look like for corn, it's a bigger spread for soybeans. Wheat at 946 million compared to the trade estimate of 934. What you make of the numbers? What did the trade do after the fact?
Well, the corn number was slightly friendly, as you said, slightly below the average guess. Beans more so, way below what the trade was guessing. And if you look at the breakdown between on-farm and off-farm, it kind of reiterates what we've been saying all along. The farmers are extremely bullish. For soybeans, the off-farm stocks, in other words, what the elevators have, are down 21% from a year ago, whereas the beans stored on farm are basically down just 1%. So the farmers are holding on to about the same amount of beans as they did last year, whereas the elevators have basically depleted their stocks. Corn even more so. On-farm stocks are actually up 1%, so the farmers are holding on to 1% more corn, whereas the elevators have left 10% lower stocks than a year ago. So smaller stocks number is basically reflecting the fact that the elevators have moved a bunch of corn and soybeans. And so to encourage or entice farmers to move that other stuff off farm, we're going to have to see either the futures market rally, we'll have to see spreads tighten, or we'll have to see basis levels improve to get those last 7 billion bushels and last 1.6 billion bushels of corn or of beans to move. So I thought it was interesting to see the dichotomy between on-farm and off-farm stocks for both corn and soybeans.
Let's continue to talk a little bit about that, because there is a timing issue that is related to this. As the farmer goes to the field, they tend not to move grain at that point. I suppose they might be more prone to move soybeans quicker than corn, just simply because the storage is not as tough for corn going out to July. Do you see basis really rallying in the next month to try to get producers to do both?
It's either going to have to be a function of the spreads or the basis. We're already looking at soybeans, the May soybean futures trading 34 cents higher than July soybeans. So the trade is telling the farmers and the elevators, we want the beans sooner rather than later. If you hold on to them into the summer, we're going to pay you 34 cents less for them. So there's a 34 cent premium right there just in the spreads. And then you take basis on top of that. A lot of the processors are paying 20, 30 over. So that's basically a 50 cent incentive to move beans sooner rather than later. Seeing the same thing in the corn, a 22, 23 cent inverse between May futures in corn and July futures, and then processors are paying probably 20 to 30 over on corn as well. So again, a 50 cent, 40 to 50 cent premium for corn to move in April, May versus that June, July time frame. So yes, I think basis levels will stay tight. And as you said, farmers are going to hopefully be in the field soon and won't be delivering as much grain. I think they're planning on delivering that grain in June and July after they get done with the April, May planting and spraying weather. But the board wants the pipeline, you know, since it's a little bit lower, they want that pipeline filled back up. And so we're going to have to see some incentive, whether it spreads futures, just overall futures or basis improvement, to encourage farmers to move grain in April and May rather than wait for the typical June, July.
Does it appear that end users have themselves covered over the next month or month and a half? While farmers are in the field, have they met their needs at this point, or is there going to be a real battle to get some of this out of the farmers' hands?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think they saw this coming. End users, the processors, the exporters, the feeders have seen this coming, and so they've tried their best, but the farmers are sitting in pretty good financial shape. They haven't had to sell. We haven't seen the $7 corn, the $15 beans until just today. So farmers have been extremely tight holders, and I don't know that the end users are completely covered. So we may see a little bit more of an incentive to get those last few bushels, well, not last few bushels, but a few more bushels moved here in that April-May timeframe, because I personally don't know that the pipeline is filled, that the coverage is there. So I think we may need to see a little bit more incentive out of the market to get a few more bushels moved.
And how long do you think it will take to put that in? Clearly, they've started already today.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the spreads, I don't know how much more the spreads have to invert until it's painful, I guess. You know, as an elevator, I can tell you that between 4 cents a month interest on corn and 9 cents a month interest on beans, and then having to roll through an inverse, we really aren't wanting to do that. So elevator stocks are going to get moved here in April and May rather than roll through those big inverses for the most part. Now, where the farmers are more of a flat price animal, more than a spreads and basis trade marketer. So they're just looking for the flat price, whatever flat price they're looking for, whether that's $6.75 or $7. We'll see if that, you know, if they get their targets hit or if they have to lower their sights a little bit. But certainly the board is doing whatever it can to encourage movement in April, May rather than June, July.
So the off-farm stocks, you think, will move pretty quickly then?
Yes, they have moved already, and I think they will continue to move. There's a big incentive, a big disincentive to hold on to corn into June, July. You're going to have to, if you have a hedge on in the May and you have to roll that into the July, you're going to lose money when you roll that futures hedge. And then, like I say, the cost of storing grain is roughly 3 to 4 cents a month for corn and 8 to 9 cents a month per bushel for soybeans. So you have to be very friendly prices in order to make up for that initial hit on the interest and the roll through the inverse.
All right. So the second part of this scheme is what's happening with acreage in the United States. I'll just use some numbers here. Corn acreage at about 92,091.996. That's 104% of the corn acreage from last year. And the soybeans are the same as last year at 87.5 million acres. I'm looking at those numbers, trying to put them into context with the grain stocks. It tells me again that soybeans are going to be the primary need, given the grain stocks are so much further down, and that carryover is probably going to have to change, I would think, in the next month.
Yes, yeah. And if you look at the state-by-state breakdown of those planted acres, almost every state was higher. All the I states were higher. Illinois, 200,000 acres higher. Indiana, 250. Iowa, 200. The only states that were a little bit lower were some of the extreme western states. Nebraska was down 100,000. Texas was down 100,000, but there's very few states that are intending to plant less corn. Most states are intending to plant more corn. And the question that everybody has is the Dakotas. You know, it's one thing to say you intend to plant more corn, but will the weather allow you to plant that corn? North Dakota intends to plant 800,000 more acres of corn. South Dakota, 150,000. Now, will that happen or not? You know, they're also intending to plant 115,000 more acres of beans in North Dakota and 100,000 more acres of beans in South Dakota. So the Dakotas are accounting for a big overall increase in corn and soybeans, and even wheat acres are up a little bit. Obviously there was a lot of prevented plant acres last year. The market, you know, or the planting intentions report taken that first week of March, farmers intended to plant all those extra acres that were prevented plant last year into something, corn, beans, or wheat. Now the question will focus on what will the weather do? Will the weather allow all those extra acres to in fact get planted or not?
Well, that's Greg Johnson again. He's with TGM of Total Grain Marketing. I'd like to continue this conversation about acreage and roll it into the futures markets a bit more with Dave Chatterton. He's with Strategic Farm Marketing. Dave, thank you for being with us. As we just have gone through the numbers for acreage and explained really where some of the acreage was coming from, the corn acreage was up in most places, finished up with the Dakotas. I'll give those in percentage, by the way. North Dakota expected to plant 127% of their corn acreage. That's their final number, not the prospective plantings last year, but 127% of their final acreage planted last year for corn. And of their soybean number, 115%. The Dakotas, including South Dakota, up 104% for soybeans and 103% for corn. So both of those states expecting to put more in the ground, at least to begin with this year. I'm wondering how you took those numbers as they came out from USDA this morning, and then I'd like to talk about the futures as well.
Yeah, and Todd, so specifically on the corn acres, you know, it's a pretty high bar that the USDA is setting here. You've got a, you know, a 3 million, you know, plus increase year over year here in the corn acres. And as you mentioned, North Dakota up 27%, South Dakota up 3%, even Minnesota up 4%. And when you look at the, you know, the current conditions on the ground up there, there's snowfall on the ground. There's three more snow events moving through here in the next 7 to 10 days that look like they could dump, you know, anywhere from, you know, a few inches up to 10 or 12 inches, depending on where you're at. North Dakota hasn't had a day over 40 degrees since November, and it doesn't look like it's going to have one anytime soon. So they're kind of breaking records. So, you know, getting to this corn numbers, this corn acreage number from the USDA, certainly not impossible. We've done it before in the U.S. if you go back into the, you know, 2018, 2017, et cetera. But getting to that this year, we're looking at, I think, a high probability of above average prevent plant acres in the northwest part of the belt, as well as what looks like probably not an early start to spring planting here in the Midwest. Maybe not a late one, but it's certainly not going to be an early one. I think we'll have our challenges here in terms of where pricing is at. Beans are closing the gap today in terms of futures that you mentioned. We're, you know, as we're talking, we're up about 15 in new crop, 15 cents in new crop beans. We're just down a couple of cents in corn. So I think the corn only being down 2 cents on a 92 million acre, you know, planting figure probably tells you that the trade, you know, sees some challenges ahead for the USDA to realize that number.
Yeah, and those challenges mostly coming in out of the Northwest. I would guess North Dakota, South Dakota, parts of the northern west, northwestern corner of Iowa, and a lot of Minnesota, where there's just a tremendous amount of snowfall. Cold weather still, maybe a lot of flooding yet to come. It may be a while before they dry out and can actually get moving in that part of the world. And their planting dates, as you mentioned earlier, prevent plant dates are much earlier than they are here in our part of the world.
Yeah, Todd, I mean, they're in a really tough situation, I feel, for these guys, because if it warms up quickly and that snow melts too quickly, they've got a flooding issue and dealing with that. If it takes too long to warm up and the snow takes too long to melt, they run out of time. So it's a situation where you're kind of, you know, you're walking a very tight window here. If you run the prevent plant numbers for a typical producer in, let's say, North Dakota, South Dakota, you're talking probably $400 to $450 an acre of prevent plant revenue on corn and probably $300 to $350 on beans. And in consideration of their, you know, cash rents versus what we have here in central Illinois or Indiana and their cost structure, those do look somewhat attractive. I think additionally, you want to, you know, keep in mind that as of last year, the crop insurance regulations were changed as to where those producers can now plant a cover crop on those prevent plant acres and either hay or graze that crop. So, you know, whether they do that for their own livestock needs, whether they do that to rent that out to other feeders or, you know, et cetera, it creates another piece of revenue that they can harvest in addition to that prevent plant payment to make it look a little bit more palatable or attractive. I think at the end of the day, farmers are farmers. They want to plant when they can, but at some point it becomes a financial decision. And so I think the recipe is there. We'll have to see what the weather does here. We always know that things can change quickly, but you know, that's the area I think that we'll have to be watching in terms of, you know, where this futures market is at. If we get to this 92 million acre number that the USDA is talking about, and we're off to a good start with the corn crop here in 45 days from now, we're definitely going to be looking at some pressure on these futures. But for right now, we don't have a lot of risk premium built in. And I think the market's a little bit cautious as to, you know, what the downside may be here in the near term until we can get a better handle on what that potential production is going to look like.
What'd you think of the grain stocks figures today?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit light versus expectations. I think that's been confirmed for a while here. Are not surprising in consideration of the universe that we have in futures and what cash basis has done. But it does tell you that, you know, just it's taking stocks away from the bottom line here and where we're at. The corn feed number was a little bit curious. You had a, you know, the stocks coming in below anticipation, but the corn feed number was one of the lowest that we've seen for this quarter here in a number of years. And that matches up with lower, you know, lower cattle numbers, certainly. But I think it'll be a moving target as we go down the road here. That today, I think, you know, you almost have an old crop, new crop focus. If you look at what's going on at old crop, corn and beans both higher. If you look at new crop, corn a little bit lower, beans certainly higher here based on that acreage figure. So it's kind of, it's not a mismatch, but I think it changes the focus and it becomes very much an old crop versus new crop type of a situation, depending on where these acres land. And I guess, you know, we can talk about prevent plan, but, you know, if we get late enough in the season, we're also going to be picking up a few extra bean acres. And I think the market desperately needs those bean acres in consideration of the crop losses that we've had in South America, particularly in Argentina, and what that's done to the overall tightness of their stocks, as well as a pretty tight balance sheet here in the U.S.
Grain stocks confirms that farmers have been pretty, they've been tight holders of both corn and soybeans on farm. Do you think they should continue to do that?
Well, I think if they've come this far and hopefully they've got some forward sales or some hedges against those bushels, then yeah, I think I'd be willing to wait on the weather here just a little bit. But I think you realize that this is not 2020 or 2021. And you need to be a little bit more, I guess, offensive, you know, in terms of how you're going to do your grain marketing and taking profit when it's on the table. And these markets can move very quickly and very aggressively. We've also got the element here of the added outside market or macro market, you know, weight or function in the marketplace that certainly can be our friend, but of late and probably looking at the next 6 to 9 months can probably be more of a downside potential risk than an upside potential, you know, favor. So, yeah, I think you need to be looking for your opportunities here and with an eye on, okay, when is planting get started? When will planting finish? And what will that mean to the markets? And coming out of planting anything near these USDA numbers, we're certainly going to be, you know, having to rely on weather at that point to create an upside event.
And finally, if you could maybe roll the South American Safrina or second crop corn potential in with the numbers you saw, grain stocks and acreage from the USDA today, what does that mean for new crop?
Well, I think it means, you know, we've got a little ways, obviously a long ways to go on that Safrina corn crop, but it still has a very good potential. There is some dryness in the central and eastern and southern parts of the belt. It's not critical at this particular point, but it's going to be here within, you know, 30 to 40 days. Having said that, corn supply globally looks like it is on the way up if you take these USDA numbers at face value. I think having gone through just what we went through with the bean crop in Argentina and southern Brazil and knowing that can happen to corn, as well as having some doubts about the U.S. acreage situation, we've bought ourselves a little bit of time here and gotten a little bit of support underneath the market. You know, we're 30 or 40 cents off the recent lows in old crop corn and 25 to 35 in new crop corn, but you know, we can probably hold these levels, if not add a little bit of risk premium, but time is really what you need to be looking at. And kind of, you know, as we move through the pollination and grain fill phase on that Safrina crop. And as we get, you know, as we get our acres planted here and we kind of how that situation looks, is it over, is it under versus USDA? And are we going to get to that number? And what's the yield potential? When did it go in, et cetera? Those are going to be the factors that are going to be very critical here. And the market will anticipate that and move quicker than, you know, those events actually happen, as it always does. So it's going to be a little bit of a dance. You're going to have to be paying attention. I know it's at a busy time of year, but have your offers working and stick to your marketing plan.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find Commodity Week, the closing market report, the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture, including the state-by-state breakdown of acreage, as well as information from the agricultural economist, the crop scientist, and the animal scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Greg Johnson of TGM Total Grain Marketing, Grain Cycles' Dale Durkles, and from Strategic Farm Marketing, Dave Chatterton. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.